presented by Bee Matters, with host Jacqueline Peterson and Dr. Haley Estrom.
Feeding does matter.
Hello, everyone. My name is Jacqueline Peterson, CEO of Feeding Matters, and I am here with Emily Mariner, who is joining us for this episode dedicated to Autism Acceptance Month. Welcome, Emily. So great to have you.
Hi, Jacqueline. Thank you so much. I'm very excited to be here.
And Emily, maybe share a little bit about both your professional and your personal background.
Great. So I'm a licensed behavior analyst, and I've been in the field for over 20 years, and I focus a lot on parent coaching. You know, I do some school workshops. I work one-on-one with clients, and I do have a background in doing feeding as well, which is how I've become familiar with Feeding Matters. And I also personally, on the other side, I have a 9-year-old autistic daughter. And so, again, I've been in the field for a long time, and I am a parent as well of a neurodiverse kiddo.
So. Yeah. You and I were talking about how that kind of parent professional shifting between worlds is kind of a challenge sometimes.
Definitely is. Mm-hmm. Distinguishing between what I know as in the profession that's recommended versus what my mom heart is telling me has actually taught me a lot. And I feel like it made me a better professional. My daughter's actually my daughter. I owe that to her. So.
Oh, I love that, Emily. And you all just celebrated something, didn't you?
We did. My daughter chose yesterday. We always do an autism acceptance celebration. And my daughter made a poster that says autism equals awesome. And she chose a steak dinner. So last night we made a cake and had a nice steak dinner, and we decorated and celebrated her beautiful brain. And we named all the things that we were grateful for that her brain has given us as a family, and just her as a human has given us as a family.
Oh, I love that, Emily. And such a great place to celebrate and to honor her brain and what is awesome about her.
We try really hard to focus on what's positive and, you know, empower her for her to advocate for herself and educate others about, you know, about autism and embrace who she is and not be something that should be seen as, I think, like a label or a diagnosis. I think so many parents are afraid of that, which I understand. But for her, we really wanted her to be able to advocate for who she is and be proud.
Love that. Love that. And that's kind of where we were talking a little bit before we jumped on to record, was just the really more of the societal awareness around neurodiversity and understanding and being accepting of all different brains. And it sounds like you've done such a great job of promoting her and as she experiences life and what that brings to everybody else. Tell me more about how you think about the neurodiversity community and how others can be a supportive ally in supporting acceptance for autism and for all neurodivergent individuals.
Well, I think it really starts a lot of it with education. Like, I think about, you know, like our family, you know, who, like, fortunately I'm in the field, and so I have an awareness and I have an education, and I realize a lot of our friends and family don't necessarily have that understanding, and especially of the term even neurodiversity. So everybody has heard of, you know, autism, you know, autism is a word that's out there. It's something that's been talked about. It's something that people are familiar with. And I think the big piece that a lot of people are missing is that education of really understanding what this neurodiversity community is. And it's really, it's a community, right? It's neurodiversity, yeah. Is a community. And it's understanding that my daughter, she's autistic and belongs to a culture and a community. And it's respecting that she has that community and a culture of her own. And so, you know, there's definitely, I do see positive growth in our field and in other fields of understanding neurodiversity and educating others on it. And I do think there is, you know, definitely a ways to go in keeping and educating others and having an understanding of what neurodiversity is and what that looks like and why is it a community versus a label.
Right. Yeah. And you because kind of even jumping on that point of education, you do a lot of educating through parent coaching and even some of the school stuff you do. How do you approach education and supporting parents in your work professionally?
It really depends on where they are in terms of if they are seeking a diagnosis, if they've had a diagnosis. You know, some families that I start with aren't really sure what some of this means, and they're very hesitant and scared, which is understandable.
Yeah.
Because there's so much information out there, and there's a lot of misinformation and misunderstanding. And at the same time, there's a lot of really great information out there. However, it is very overwhelming. And a lot of it is, if they're just new to coming into learning about it, I try to help steer them, you know, into just focusing on one area and learning a little bit at a time. It's, you know, it definitely becomes, I think, too much if they try to take too much of it.
It's so much information to, it's like information overload.
It really, it's exhausting. And then I feel like it becomes really hard to sift through what is really important information versus the information that maybe you don't need to worry about right now. And, you know, if I get families who come to me who've been, you know, they're more familiar, they've been in, you know, they've had multiple therapies, or maybe they've never had therapy, but they're seeking it. You know, and that's where I really kind of listen and try to learn what their journey has been thus far and seeing what is it that they really need. Is it that they're looking to, you know, looking to further educate themselves as a family, and or a lot of times families come to me and how to educate their either their kiddo who has a diagnosis and or the other family members, and how do they help the family understand and learn, and how do they help, you know, their child. And, you know, that's a personal choice for everyone. And that's what I tell every family is, of course, you know, I had my way of doing things. It doesn't mean that that's the way that I am going to tell them to do. And so I try to go over as many options as possible, again, to not overwhelm.
Yeah.
And try to, you know, try to limit that. But there is definitely a lot out there.
There is. And we talk on this podcast a lot about how there's this, like, we have to shift between, there's like standards and guidelines and all these things, but there's also so much about the individual family and the individual person and how much individualization is needed. And I love that you really think about, like, what comes first for a family and what is their choice for a family? Because it is such a personal choice.
And it's really what families value. Some families really value discretion and are very hesitant, and you never want to force a family into something they're not ready for. I feel like it has, and I've seen in my experience, has very negative impacts for that family, and ultimately it doesn't benefit, you know, that their child. And so it's really meeting the family where they're at. And you know, and then I see families who are, their value is, you know, maybe one of the parents is autistic themselves, or they have another autistic child and they're ready for it. And, you know, they're ready to keep moving forward. And so it's really, I try to meet families where they're at and listen to their values and then guide them from there.
Being value centered, I feel like, is so important in all of our work.
It's so important. And just, you know, we focus on that with our clients. You know, mm-hmm. I was people, you know, being a BCBA, a behavior analyst, it's one of those things where I tell people it's not about what we value. We might value, like, we might want a kid to do something based on what we value, but it's really, we want them to do something based on what they value, because then they're going to be more willing and more likely to do it. And so we have to be careful to not insert our values on our kiddos. And it goes the same for these families. We shouldn't insert our values or our beliefs on our families. And I do have to remove my personal experience when I am discussing, you know, options with families and different, you know, roads they can take and journeys they can go. But I always offer, if they want, I'm always happy to talk about my personal experience.
That's a great way to be able to be present and give them space. But also, if they do need options or want to hear someone else's experience, you're able to kind of still make space for that too. So in your work, I know you work with a lot of other professionals or other disciplines too, as your families are seeking multiple therapies. How do you approach supporting your families and also their journey to many different specialists or other therapies?
And that is definitely very common and, you know, in our field, I feel like in a lot of fields. And, you know, I personally love working with a lot of different providers. I feel as though I learn so much from them, and I believe it does benefit the kids so much. My kiddos benefit from, you know, different expertise, and I can't possibly know everything. And there's definitely better people out there that are better suited for sometimes what I see a client need. And so there are times where I make referrals and I'm happy to decrease my hours to create space for that service if that we feel like is priority in that moment and if the family feels ready for it. I also at the same time do caution families on burnout for themselves and for their kiddo. You know, you do see families who, especially if they're newer to going through the diagnosis, there's sort of this panic of they need OT and speech and feeding and ABA and I should put them in a specialized school or do they need this? And it becomes so overwhelming. And you see families running to different providers and spending their afternoons or their days, you know, just taking their kids all over to, you know, so many different services and so many different therapies. And I think, you know, the most important thing is making sure that those therapies are all aligned and everybody's on the same page. But also I think it's being cautious of, it's okay to say that maybe my kid needs less ABA so that we can make room for OT, speech, and feeding. And maybe all three of those is too much. So maybe we prioritize, you know, feeding and OT. And then as we make movement on feeding, we introduce speech and then we can increase, you know, it's really, I think, finding the right amount for your family. And again, it's okay as a parent to say like, this is too much. This is a lot for me. I'm overwhelmed.
Yeah.
And if you feel that, it's okay to pull back on a service. And it's okay to talk to your providers and say, what can we do? I do that a lot with families where sometimes families are, you know, they say like, I just don't, you know, I don't think we have it in us this summer for this many. And it's like, that's fine. Let's take some time. Let's, whatever it is that you guys need, we need to make sure we're accommodating because burnout is real for everyone.
For everyone. Yeah. That's exact conversation we have around feeding therapy a lot too, which is like, sometimes we just need to stop. Or maybe if it's not working, we need to think of something different and it's okay to take a break. Family burnout is very real. Kid burnout, so real too. Because it's just a lot. Therapist burnout too. Yes, totally.
Especially when you're doing something so specialized and is like feeding. Like I said, again, I have a lot of background in feeding. I've done a lot of feeding therapy. And, you know, you do notice when kids get burned out on it, it's okay to take a break to reset. And I say, hey, let's just reset. Let's just take a couple of weeks and let's reset. Let's all, you know, try something different. And we're going to come in with a different approach, something new, something fresh. And it's okay to do that. And it's, I think sometimes we get stuck on, we have to make this certain amount of progress in this amount of time. And it's important to take the family and the kid into consideration as well and what they need and what they can handle. Because I do see a lot of families, it's overwhelming and in terms of that. And, you know, I'm very conscientious of what families can handle if I'm asking them, especially for feeding. You know, it's things like making sure we're introducing foods that the family always has accessible, that they're not going out and buying special, you know.
Yep.
Make their life as easy as possible because our job should not make their lives harder.
Right. How can we focus on the function of their life and what works in their life? And I mean, I think another thing in that same vein is school. And you said you do a lot of work in like kind of like that school workshopping.
Yes.
How do you either support parents as they're navigating school systems or support schools and what they're trying to do to support families and kids?
Definitely different because you have parents who are looking at all these different schools. And again, very overwhelming. Because there's a lot of different types of schools out there. There's micro schools, there's public school, there's private school, there's private school for learning differences. There's, you know, there's autism schools. There's just so many different types. And especially out here in Phoenix, there's a ton. And it's really, you know, I always tell families, when I am working with families from that perspective, I tell families to tour as many as possible, even if they don't think their kids, if I have families who are like, I don't think my kid could go there. I wish they could. And I say, you know what, just go tour it, see what you like about it. And that's a great goal one day. Or, you know, I have families who, you know, I think the hardest thing for families, especially depending on what their child needs, is one, finding the right school and the right fit, but two, it's also as a parent having that acceptance. And so, you know, as a parent, I can speak personally, we all envision our kids going to school and, you know, maybe doing sports or being in drama, you know, theater club and doing all these different activities and having groups of friends and us as parents going to all the events. And then you get this diagnosis and it's suddenly it's like, well, wait, that vision I have of my child in this school suddenly changed. And now what does that mean for our family and for my kid? And am I going to find a school that is neuroaffirming and support my kid in who they are? And it, you know, that becomes, I think, a huge thing that parents have to work through and navigate when they're considering these schools. And I see it weigh on a lot of parents as we work through this. And so I definitely tell parents to do their research. I tell parents to talk to the schools and be open about it in terms of autism and, you know, are you neuroaffirming and see how much the school knows about it. And some schools, I'll be honest, they're very honest and upfront and they say, we don't actually know much. It's the schools then who go out and get the training. I've had schools say, but we'll get training, we'll get support. Mm. And I'm like, you know what? We probably can.
That's make it great.
Work. They're
yeah.
If they're this open, we can make it work.
Right.
And so I've worked with so many wonderful schools that were open to training and like listening and learning. I've worked with some great teachers. And I think so from the school perspective, I think that's what's, you know, hard is I tell every family and teacher in school, actually schools before schools, I'm like, make sure if you're saying this is a good fit, it's truly a good fit for your school. And then the same for parents, because what we don't want is we don't want to put a kiddo in a school that's not the right environment. And then you have the possibility of school trauma and all these other things that can yeah. happen. And yes. then you see these, you know, the administration, the teachers, they carry a heavy load with them. They carry a weight with them where they feel guilty and they're feeling this pressure and then they're feeling burned out. And then the kids feeling burned out because it's not the right environment for them. And then the parents were back to this square one where we're just like, where do we go? And now, you know, it's just this nobody that's, to me, I think that's the thing I always caution families and educators about is one, I've worked with some schools where I'm like, I love that you want to be neuroaffirming and inclusive. Just make sure you know what that means before accepting, you know, my kiddo. And then same with parents, make sure that this is a fit that you feel is right for your kid and your family and not just that vision that you had one day. Because I think that's yeah. the hardest thing for any family.
Sure, like separating the reality from the hope.
Yes. Yeah. And because we really want kids to be successful. And I always tell families it's not, you know, for, you know, me personally, it's yes. Did I think my daughter was going to go to a big school? And we're very blessed. She is at New Way Academy. So she is at a school for neurodiverse kiddos. And so, you know, she, you know, has the opportunity to be able to talk openly about autism and talk to her friends about it. And, you know, that's something that was important for our family, that she was in a neuroaffirming community and environment.
Yeah.
And so,
yeah,
you know, and so I think it's just having families know that do your research, do tours, ask questions, ask the hard questions, ask about what their supports look like, ask about the teachers and what the trainings are in terms of autism or neurodiversity, ADHD, depending on, you know, the different, you know, diagnoses your child may have. And so, yes.
Wonderful. And I think that's exactly what it is. It's being supportive of what they need and allowing them all the options to make that happen. And it's nice that there are so many options now. And as we kind of narrow in our time together too, if someone's listening and they may be suspicious of an autism assessment or may be curious about what that looks like, a lot of times we see that families experience the feeding challenge piece first before even like a PFD or ARFA diagnosis, and then maybe an autism diagnosis is not too long after that. Maybe help walk any family who's curious or maybe just wanting to know more if they're worried about their child and what they may need.
Definitely. And when you see that sort of, like you were saying, the PFD, the ARFID, when those, you know, those can sometimes be signs. And if you're seeing, you know, any sort of sign of autism or any sort of developmental, any developmental need, it's, you know, I think the challenge is talking to you. I usually say talk to your pediatrician. It really depends on your pediatrician and how
sure.
well-versed yep. you are in autism, because unfortunately, a lot of pediatricians, especially for early detection, say a lot of kids will grow out of it. A lot of kids are, you know, this is still typical at this age, but listen to your gut. And I always tell people, I always recommend, if you have questions or you're hesitant and you're not sure, definitely do an evaluation. And you can do private evaluations. Nobody has to know the results of the evaluation if you are concerned about of that, you know, that piece of it. So I always tell families, if you're not really sure, just start there. Start with, you know, an yeah. evaluation through, you know, get on. I know there's a lot of wait lists. So call and get on all the wait lists and follow up with, you know, these companies and these organizations that do it. And, you know, or talk to, if you know somebody who's gone through it, that can be a huge help too. And, you know, there's one of those things too, where I always tell families, if you're on a wait list and they say it's so hard to wait, you know, to know or to get the diagnosis, that doesn't mean you have to not take action. You can still take action. Great resources out there. I know you guys have a ton of resources on probably feeding strategies and just simple things they can start doing. Because I think as parents, it's really hard to wait. And when we feel like we can take action and we feel like we can do something, we have a plan, it helps settle our mom and dad hearts little bit.
Yeah. They can process our anxiety a bit.
Yes. And so coming up with a plan, sitting down saying, okay, I don't know if my kid's going to get diagnosed or not, but I am seeing these flags. And because I am seeing these flags, this is what I'm going to do right now. And this is how I'm going to handle this right now. And I've got this resource and that resource. And what can I pull from these resources that fit my family and my kid's needs? And how can I apply that to my family? And it's okay to start on things while you're waiting. I think it's the most powerful thing you can do for you and your kid, because I feel like waiting is just, it's not a great feeling.
No, no one likes being stuck in limbo like that, for sure. Well, Emily, thank you so much for joining me to celebrate Autism Acceptance Month and just all things neurodivergent acceptance and support as well. And so just truly thank you to for coming and sharing your story, both as a professional and as a parent. And we really appreciate it. And so thank you to all who are listening. And we'll see you next week. Thank you.